You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Want to increase your salary? Discover your earning potential with CareerBuilder. CareerBuilder.com knows you have superpowers that make you good to your job. They're called skills. And CareerBuilder.com has tools specially designed to help you move up, like CareerBuilder CoLab. Check out resume examples. Learn what recruiters are looking for. Search salaries. And view different career paths based on your skills. You'll be amazed to know how many ways you can use the skills you already have to build your future. Visit CareerBuilder.com.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Hey everybody, it's Wednesday, February 21st, 2024. Welcome to the NFL Fantasy Football Podcast, or we should probably start exercising again. It's me, your man, MG Marcus Grant, joined by Michael F. Florio. Laquan Jones, not with us. He's off doing actual work this week. Of course, as you probably know, if you follow the show, he is a researcher for NFL Media, and he is down in New Orleans, just hanging out, eating seafood and beignets. No, apparently he's, he actually is doing some work around some of the HBCUs. Goings on down there for football. I know he's there with Steve Weiss, Bucky Brooks, Charles Davis, among others. So we are going to prime him for information when he returns about who he saw and what he likes. But in the meantime, we got plenty to talk about. I mean, Florio, I know this is an audio only podcast, but I'm proud of you. You are rocking a Golden State Warriors City hoodie right now. We talked a little bit about that before the show, but in his place. Hanging out, at least with us for a little while. It's the one and only Matt Okada. Matt, it's good to have you here, man. How you doing?
Yeah, it's good to be here. It's the NFL offseason, which, you know, has its pluses and its minuses, mostly minuses because there's no football. But other than that, I'm doing great.
So Matt wrote a column. We'll dive into that in just a little bit. We're also going to go through Daniel Jeremiah's mock draft 2.0 because it is mock draft season, of course. And Florio and I will talk about some of the interesting names and whether we like some of the landing spots. Plus, we may talk about some All-Star games because the NBA All-Star game just happened. And Florio, you said you don't really watch All-Star games anymore.
No, I'm not in. I love Skills Challenge. Like, I watch Saturday night for the NBA. I love the Home Run Derby. I watch grown men play dodgeball every year. But the All-Star games themselves, not a fan. Although I know we're going to talk this later. I think, Marcus, I have figured out the way to make them more competitive.
Okay, cool. Well, we will get to that later on in the show. But I want to start with a column that Matt Okada has currently on NFL.com. You can go check it out. It's about cap casualties or potential cap casualties because we are getting toward that time of year. Free agency starts in about 3 weeks. So we're going to be talking, obviously, about where players are going to move, but teams have to sort of make room in terms of being able to sign players. And so that means that, unfortunately, some guys are going to be left without a job when it's all said and done. And so, Matt, I wanted to go through yours, and you have it broken down into AFC and NFC. Some of the names, obviously, aren't necessarily fantasy relevant. They're more defensive guys. It's worth reading the whole thing for anybody out there. Go check it out. But I wanted to pick out some of the offensive names, obviously, that could make an impact. And one that jumped out at me, it jumped out at me anyway, but even more so because when I woke up this morning and I was checking Twitter, as I am wont to do, I know it's not healthy to lay in bed and scroll Twitter, but whatever, I do it anyway. every day on Twitter, it seems as though there is a new player that we are talking about, whether it's a draft prospect, a current player, what have you. This morning's main character seemed to be one Nicholas Jamal Chubb. You have written, other people have written, that he could be a cap casualty, that the Browns could move on from him. You mentioned in your piece that the knee injury certainly is going to be impactful. And when I read it, I thought, is that the whole thing? I mean, I know that the salary number is a big thing, but Matt, if you look at it, if Nick Chubb played a full 17 games at the end of the playoffs and was fully healthy at the end of the year, would we even be having this discussion about him right now?
I think we'd be having the discussion because there are other factors at play. I think that the severity of the discussion would be a lot less intense because obviously Nick Chubb has been the face of this franchise, at least on the offensive side of the ball, for a while now. And letting him go sounds absurd, but there is a lot to consider, and the injury is big. It is a big deal on multiple fronts. It was, you know, severe damage, MCL and ACL. It was the same knee he injured back at Georgia. It's never good to re-injure the same knee for a running back. Also, while he recovered from that college injury, he was 20 then. He's 28 now. There's a lot different when it comes to recovery time, getting back to 100%. And then to move on from the injury a little bit, hitting 28 is kind of that dreaded age for running backs a lot of the times, especially when you've got the workload and the injury history that Chubb does, where even those guys we believe to be the best in the league begin to fall off a little bit. We've seen it all, you know, fantasy RB1s hit that age, fall out, and begin to, you know, come to the twilight of their career, if you will. So I would consider that a concern, even if Chubb hadn't dealt with this injury. But now you have this. I don't think he comes back early 2024. I don't know, from what I've heard talking to people who know this kind of stuff really well, I don't know if he comes back 100% until the very end of this next season. And when you've got a $16 million cap hit, which is the third highest among running backs, that makes that really tough to swallow. You know, he has to be a top three back in the league, basically, to make that work. And if he's fully 100%, he is. He's Nick Chubb. We know he's one of the best running backs in the league. But if he's not, and that's basically the ceiling, you're taking on a lot of risk. And I will just throw this in there as one final thing, because I know you mentioned, you know, when he's playing 17 games, should we even doubt this? Should we even have this conversation? Just throwing this out there. And trust me, I believe RBs matter. I'm a fantasy guy. The Browns had the number 10 scoring offense in the league last year. That was their best finish since 2007. In this year, they didn't have Chubb. I'm just putting it out there. Their quarterback situation wasn't great for most of the year either. So don't know if you can put it on that. I think we get attached to people, to running backs especially, but also to just players in a franchise sometimes. And it might be time to move on and go in a new direction for that offense.
So David Njoku is the key. He's the engine that keeps that offense going, is what you're saying.
The classic 17th year breakout or whatever you're using.
Hey, David Njoku. That's what I'm taking away from that whole conversation right there.
So all three of us are in a mock draft together right now. Nick Chubb went in the middle of the third round. I can tell you right now, I'm out on that cost. But It sounds like you are as well, Okada. Two names that we did go not that early, but pretty early, were Alvin Kamara and Aaron Jones, and you have them both as potential cut candidates. I think a lot of fantasy players or fans look at it and say, well, Alvin Kamara was their top target for much of this year, and Aaron Jones just had them on a good playoff run. So do you think it's possible that either or both could restructure their deal and stick with the team, or do you think that we're going to see each of these running backs on a different team next year?
No, I do think it's possible. And with Aaron Jones, I honestly think it's probably more likely than not that they do figure out a way to keep him there, or at least they try to. They have said that. Brian Gutekunst, the GM, has come out and said the hope and the anticipation is that they'll bring him back. Just the details of how they do that are still in flux. And last year, he took a $5 million pay cut to stay in Green Bay because he loves playing in Green Bay and they love him a lot. He's a big locker room piece. He's a crux of their offense. So I think that they want him there. He also carries a lot of dead money, $12 million, unless they cut him post June 1st, which is a complicated thing that comes along with the salary cap situation that helps free up money. And, you know, like you guys mentioned, he came on very strong at the end of last year after having a really rocky start to the season. So I think it's possible. I think it's likely that they try to restructure him somehow, get that number down so he's not up there at the very top in terms of a running back salary cap, and continue to build around Jordan Love and him in that backfield, which would be great. Kamara feels a lot tougher to me. He has the highest salary cap hit among running backs, $18.8 million. And that's already problematic enough. People don't want to pay running backs that much money, no matter how well you're performing. To add to that, the Saints have the worst cap situation in the league, and it's by a mile. They're in the 80 millions over the cap. Oof. It's like, it's absurd how bad of a situation they're in.
This is a yearly thing for them.
Somehow they managed to get it under, but you know what? It hasn't looked good recently. It hasn't turned into playoff runs of any significance. So they need to figure out something new. And Kamara feels like probably the best, if not one of the best places to do that, because that cap hit isn't, you know, insane. But also, he's missed several games over the last three seasons. He hasn't hit double-digit touchdowns since 2020, which is what he was doing like a maniac early in his career and earned him the extension he's playing on right now. He had career lows in yards last year. He wasn't that efficient. I still believe he's a great player. Obviously, he's incredible. He's one of the best pass-catching backs in the league. But for a team in this bad of financial straits who needs to figure out something new, that number might be too much to figure out how to restructure. I'm sure they like to. I don't know if they can pull it off.
Yeah, I mean, just looking at it feels like Kamara's the guy who probably leaves. I can't imagine the Packers moving on from Aaron Jones just because, look, they're not keeping A.J. Dillon.
No.
You know, that didn't work out, you know, and he's an unrestricted free agent. I imagine they're easily going to let him walk. But as you mentioned, with Jordan Love showing what he showed us this year, with that group of young, talented pass catchers that they have around there, I just imagine that having Aaron Jones really sort of cements the growth of this offense. I think Green Bay will do everything they can to try to keep him there, but I can very well see Alvin Kamara playing somewhere else besides New Orleans next year. I would say that maybe he goes to the Chargers and replaces Austin Eckler, but that number might be sort of big. But the Chargers do have some decisions to make at the wide receiver spot. Mike Williams, Keenan Allen, a couple of guys that could be sent packing depending on what the Chargers want to do. But look, they have a new head coach in Jim Harbaugh. They have a new offensive coordinator in Greg Roman. They really are still trying to build around Justin Herbert. And at least through, you know, the first year, Matt, Quentin Johnston shows that he still has a lot of work to do to be a guy that they can count on regularly. So does this mean the Chargers have to try to keep at least one of those two receivers for next year?
I think, you know, if they came to me, if John came to me and Jim came to me and asked, I would say, yes, you need to try to keep at least one. Do they think that? I'm not sure. I don't know. Not necessarily. You know, we've talked some really big names so far in this pod getting cut, and people, you know, probably react to that with, how could you possibly move on from someone like that? The best place to look for teams to move on from guys who seem like franchise faces that are stars is when you've got a whole new regime, and they have one. Mm-hmm. So I could easily see them being in a situation where they say, we're going to build around Justin Herbert, but we're going to do it the way that we want. And that looks like X. Quentin Johnston has a long way to go, as you pointed out. So I don't think you want to go into this year with Justin Herbert and Quentin Johnston. And there's also a good chance that Austin Eckler is moving on because he's a free agent. Mm-hmm. You know, he's among their best pass catchers. So if you have to cut Williams and Allen, you're putting Justin Herbert in a tough spot. We've seen all these young quarterbacks take that big step forward when they got that star receiver. What happens to Herbert if they get rid of two star receivers? Does he take a big step backwards? I don't think I want to know. I don't think the Chargers should try to find out. And I will say, they have the number 5 pick in the draft. I think there's a very good chance they get Neighbors or Odunze there. Maybe Marvin Harrison Jr. if by some miracle he falls to them. Unlikely. But I'd much rather have any of those guys as a duo to Allen or Williams, especially if it's Allen and they can learn from him for a year or two. That sounds like the ideal situation to me. I'd like to keep Keenan for sure. I'd like to keep one if you can. We'll see if they do. I think it's definitely best for Herbert if they can.
Yeah, I know Keenan is older, but he's healthier as of late, coming off of a more productive season. And like you said, he's the veteran. So if they keep one, he seems like the one that they might opt to keep a little bit. But what about sticking in that same division, Okada? The Broncos, right? Like, we know that they, not a total regime change this year, but last year it was, and they tried to do it with Russell Wilson, and that did not work out, and it all kind of seems like he is going to be playing elsewhere next year, but some of his pass catchers, I know they want to get rid of Jerry Jeudy, but you know that Cortland Sutton and Tim Patrick are the two that are on the hook here.
Yeah, if they get rid of Jeudy, which I agree, it seems likely, that'll probably be through a trade. It's also not impossible that one of these guys gets traded through some kind of, you know, tag and trade, or who knows. It's going to look bad. This offense is going to look bad. That's my main takeaway here, because I don't know what's going to happen with Russell Wilson. Obviously, towards the end of last year, when the whole you're going to sit thing came out, we all just assumed for sure it was over. They were going to move on and restart and do something else. Since then, there's been a little bit of chatter about maybe they'll try to work it out. We haven't heard much else. He's still not gone. So who knows what's going to happen there. But Russell Wilson was playing pretty decently, quote unquote, not for him compared to elsewhere in his career, but decently for an NFL quarterback. And that team was still middling at best from an offensive standpoint. And that was with Cortland Sutton scoring a touchdown, which felt like every single game, which I don't think is realistic. Yes, it would felt like a breakout, but that kind of touchdown output is probably going to regress. So they're in bad cap shape. They have one pick in the first four rounds, which is number 12 overall. I don't necessarily think they're going to use that on the offensive side of the ball. It's going to be messy. They have a lot of holes to fill. I think that cutting one or maybe both of these wide receivers is going to be a good way to start doing that. If they do that and they want to get rid of Jeudy, what do they have to catch passes? I don't know. I'll tell you what they have is Marvin Mims. Imagine giving him a proper target distribution. Ooh, maybe that's the secret plan. But until it happens, yeah, this is going to be a messy situation.
Yeah, it's funny how it went from, you know, a couple of years ago, they bring in Russell Wilson. There's all this excitement about, you know, what things are going to happen. You know, then the Nathaniel Hackett situation was just an abject disaster. They try to, you know, paper over that with Sean Payton. And that really didn't work, because I don't know that he and Russ were ever really going to get along. And now here we are. They're sitting in limbo with no real direction or anywhere to go. And as you mentioned, it doesn't seem like they're in a real position to go through a real rebuild. My fear is, if I'm a Broncos fan, my fear is that we're going to be stuck in football purgatory for a long time, where we are not good enough to make the playoffs or make a deep run in the playoffs, but not bad enough to end up near the top of the draft board. They also have that dude who wears number 15 sitting in Kansas City on top of their division, which is sort of problematic for them, really problematic for them. This last name, and I put this on here because I know this one is near and dear to your heart. Taysom Hill. I mean, we talked about Alvin Kamara and what he could be, you know, or what could be his future in New Orleans. I know how much you love Taysom Hill. I know how much you have caped up for him. He seems like one of those guys where New Orleans is the only place that he could do what he is doing. What do you think his future potentially could be?
Okay, so here's what I'll say on that. I don't think that there's anything particularly creative in the Saints offense as of now that allows him to succeed. I just think they're willing to use him the way that makes sense. So the question is somebody else? Because forget whether or not they invented the mold for how to use him. Everyone else has seen it now. So someone else can figure out how to do it the same way they did. It's just a question of who and would they be willing to. From a fantasy standpoint, I think it's probably tough that he goes somewhere else and has as common an occurrence of relevance as he has these past couple years, just because the Saints have proven to be so willing to use him somewhat consistently. It's still like 40% of snaps, but when you play like Taysom Hill and get the involvement he does when he's in the game, that can be enough to be useful sometimes. I think there are some places where it's possible. I have a little mini list if you're open to hearing it.
Sure. Yeah.
Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
Taysom Hill in the hands of Dan Campbell and Ben Johnson. in unique situations on fourth down, tell me that Dan Campbell wouldn't love to have Taysom Hill.
Taysom Hill and Dan Campbell seem like two peas in a pod. Like, I think they would get along great.
It's just beauty. So that, I hope for it.
I don't want that. Because he's going to be coming in. Forget Montgomery taking touchdowns away from Gibbs. He'll take it from both of them.
True. Yeah, there's a lot of offensive pieces he'd be taking away from there, which would be, get annoying. But for Taysom's sake, that would be a cool one.
Yes.
The Chiefs. That one's just so obvious.
Yeah.
Andy Reid, the stuff he likes to do behind the line, that he would be Kadarius Toney, but actually good and not dropping the ball. And also, the very, very sneaky piece that if Andy Reid's not hasn't thought about this yet, Andy, listen up. This team is unwilling to run QB sneaks because of what happened to Mahomes a few years ago when he dislocated his kneecap. They never do it. But when you're 1 yard from a first down or 1 yard from a goal line, we've seen it has become the norm in the NFL. It is a crucial. You bring Taysom Hill in, easy. First down. Okay. that one's so obvious to me. We'll see. I also like the Browns. I think Kevin Stefanski is pretty creative. They have a high pace of play, which is something the Saints do that allows Hill to get in more commonly. So that one's kind of interesting to me. For some reason, I like the Jaguars just because I feel like Doug Peterson and Taysom Hill mesh well. I don't know why. That's just a gut feel. And then the Rams because Sean McVay. Those are my spots.
Sean McVay would find some really creative things, I think, to do with Taysom Hill.
I'm surprised not to hear he could be the Russell Wilson replacement for Sean Payton in Denver.
Hey, that's not a bad one. But I don't know what's happening with Russell yet.
That's true. That, you know what? Now that you say that, Florio, it would not surprise me if somehow Sean Payton finds a way to wrangle him over to Denver.
He didn't start
maybe
it.
Maybe not an every down quarterback, but just enough to, like, you know, make it interesting over there.
He'll get him paid. Sure. That's for sure.
True.
Sean Payton will for sure get him paid. Hey, man, the column's great over at NFL.com. You can go check it out. The full thing with the potential cap casualties. Any interest in maybe sticking around with us for one more segment, talking some DJ mock draft?
Yeah, sign me up.
All right, sounds good. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll talk about DJ's mock draft. Matt Okada still hanging out with us a little bit longer here on the NFL Fantasy Football Podcast.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
You ever get the feeling the city walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating your soul? You crave wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe chase some elk, fish a private stream. Well, listen up. There's a whole world out there, and finding your own piece of it just got easier. Head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forest, mountains, you name it. Search by acreage, location, the kind of hunting or fishing you dream of. Land.com. It's where the adventure begins.
Well, it is mock draft season, and you've got the folks on NFL.com putting out their respective mock drafts. Of course, Daniel Jeremiah being chief among them. He is on mock draft 2.0 already. So one's going to dive into that. Matt Okada still hanging out with us here on the pod today. And the first thing I noticed when I looked at mock draft 2.0 from Daniel Jeremiah, a.k.a. Move the Sticks on Twitter, four quarterbacks in the top eight picks. I know this is a year where people love the quarterbacks that are in the draft this year. I think it's also because people don't necessarily love the quarterbacks that are potentially going to be available next year. So this feels like a year when everybody is trying to scramble and get one of those guys that they think can sort of turn their fortunes around. So the four guys that DJ has going early on. Caleb Williams going number one to the Chicago Bears. Not really a big surprise, nor is Drake May going at number two to the Washington Commanders. You go down a little bit further. He's got Jaden Daniels at number six to the New York Giants, and J.J. McCarthy, who has been getting a lot of buzz lately, moving up a lot of draft boards. DJ's got him going at number eight to the Atlanta Falcons, the now Arthur Smith free Atlanta Falcons. So I will start with you. Of those guys, presuming, you know, I know this is all speculation, but if this were to happen, as Jeremiah predicts, which one is in the best spot to produce immediately? I think I know who you're going to say, but I want to hear it anyway.
Were you thinking Jaden Daniels?
I was.
Yeah, for fantasy purposes, I don't care where they go. It's Jaden Daniels to me, because think Anthony Richardson, think Jalen Hurts, think Lamar Jackson. I'm not saying that Daniels is like he's not nearly as big as Anthony Richardson or Hurts or anything, but those quarterbacks were not the number one in their class or anything like that. But for fantasy, they were, because what they give you with their legs. And Jaden Daniels is that dual threat guy who can come in and immediately be a top five dual threat type of quarterback and rush for something like 700-800 yards, maybe more than that. And if we're talking about that, then we're talking about a fantasy QB1. The only questions I have with this landing spot is would Daniel Jones still be there? Would they start Daniel Jones early on? I like the supporting cast best in Atlanta, but McCarthy, I like him as a player too, but none of these four, the other three, I mean, run like Jaden Daniels. So I don't care where he lands for fantasy purposes. I think he's the QB1 next year.
Oh, God, I mentioned this last week. The thing that worries me about Jaden Daniels, right? For every highlight you see of him making a great throw, there's one highlight of him taking just an insane hit, a wicked hit. Mm-hmm. I mean, the comp Wile E. Coyote has come up more than once, which doesn't seem like a great thing for a quarterback. I mean, does that worry you at all for him at the next level?
It does, and it should in general with these quarterbacks that are willing to rush. It's always going to be a concern. Now, to Florio's point, it's also always going to be a huge positive for fantasy. So it's kind of that give and take. You have to weigh it out and hope that he can figure it out. From what we've seen, I think that teams are getting good at coaching quarterbacks how to protect themselves a little better at the next level. So hopefully we can see that there. Is the Giants coaching staff one of the ones I'm most willing to trust in the NFL? No, not really. I'll throw my hat in on this question, by the way, to say,
please.
I know that Caleb Williams is obviously the best prospect. Not only is he the best prospect in this draft, most people consider him, or a lot of people consider him, to be one of the best prospects of the last decade at the position. So it is easier to trust in his fantasy output from the get-go, even though he's not the rusher that Daniels is. That said, when Andrew Luck came into the league, he was productive right away. This is the kind of guy that people are comping Caleb to from a prospect level standpoint. So it's possible he could produce that well for fantasy out the gate. But B, if he goes to the Bears, I know that the Bears don't seem like the best situation offensively, but you know, they finally got DJ Moore, who was great. They have the opportunity to build around that in several different directions from an offensive side of the ball. They have the third most cap space in the league. They have two picks in the first and four or five in the first four rounds. So they have a lot of opportunity. And if they trade Justin Fields to make this pick of Caleb Williams, that's going to net them maybe another late first, early second plus is what it sounds like. So that's a lot of assets. And if they do this and take Caleb number one, obviously they're full focus is going to be build around Caleb Williams, build a team that can support him, give him the pieces he needs. So if he goes one and they build up a solid offensive roster around him, he'd be up there for me as well.
I know when we had Adam Rank on a few weeks ago, I mean, he very much is still in the, I think we should build around Justin Fields camp. He understands the process of going out and drafting Caleb Williams. He still believes that they can build around Fields and what have you. I'm sort of torn because, you know, my Trojan allegiance wants Caleb to go somewhere where he can immediately be successful, where he is, you know, like ideally he goes to a Houston type situation, right? Where they just suddenly blossom and everything is great and wonderful. I don't think Chicago's the worst spot for him. You mentioned DJ Moore. I think, you know, Caleb's biggest strength is sort of playing off schedule. He's a great improviser, gets out of the pocket and makes plays there. I think that's a good spot for him to be in. I think Drake May, though, might be the guy who steps in and plays really, really well right away. We saw what Sam Howell did. Forget the fact that he was sacked 11 billion times this season. He stood in there and he made some really good throws. I think it's awkward for him to watch the guy who was behind him in North Carolina come in and take his job potentially. But I think Drake May steps up. And I think Washington's not a bad spot for him to go in and be productive. They've got some good pass catchers there. You know, the running back situation isn't great, but it isn't the worst either. I know people love him. I know people have talked about him potentially going number one. I think he's in a really, really good spot to come in and be productive right away. Any thoughts, maybe, Matt, on which guys maybe set up long term? Is it Caleb? Is he the long term answer out of this group?
Long term, I think it has to be Caleb, even over Daniels, assuming, like, let's just assume that Daniels is better in year one, as Florio laid out, because of that rushing ability. I have no problem with that take at all. And even if you told me that that was guaranteed to happen, I would still take Caleb for the long term because of the value of that prospect, that level of prospect. We are talking about, you know, do we want to say he's going to be the next Patrick Mahomes? No. But is he going to be a high-end QB1 for Dynasty or every year in redraft for the next decade? It's a better bet than you ever get with a draft prospect coming into March. So, yeah, it's Caleb for me. Hopefully that team builds around him better than they have. And I'll just throw out there, no team in NFL history has a worse history of QB success. Ugh. They've never had a star, ever. It's actually embarrassing and insane. So hopefully he is the savior.
I mean, look, they still have never had a 4,000-yard passer
insane.
In their history. I mean, you talk about Bears quarterbacks, they still refer to Sid Luckman. Sid Luckman, his last season was 1950.
Going
on 75 years since Sid Luckman last played an NFL game, and that's the guy they still refer to when they talk about great Chicago Bears quarterbacks. Yeah, that's rough. The other position that DJ has going very early, wide receivers, 3 in the first 9 picks. Marvin Harrison Jr. to New England, Malik Nabers to Arizona, Romo Dunze to Chicago with the number 9 pick. We were sort of talking, the three of us, in Slack yesterday about this, and I think we all sort of agreed that Marvin Harrison Jr., obviously an amazing prospect, going to New England makes us all feel depressed and sad and gloomy. But Florio, I'll start with you. I mean, if these were the actual landing spots, how do you rank the three of these guys?
I would put Nabers first for sure. Because he's so explosive, he could win downfield, and he'd have the best quarterback throwing him the ball with Kyler Murray. And I tweeted about it yesterday. Mino Cotta, we're talking about it on Slack. Like, right now is a great time to buy Kyler Murray because he's going to get a big upgrade at wide receiver one. I think, regardless if it's Marvin Harrison Jr. or Nabers, but I would put him one. I think then it's a conversation after, because Odunze would be catching passes from Caleb Williams. Assumed if things broke down this way, but he would be the number 2 target behind DJ Moore. I don't know who would be the quarterback in this instance for the Patriots. Hopefully it wouldn't be Mac Jones someone or Bailey Zappi. Hopefully they'd go out and sign someone. I still think I would put Marvin Harrison Jr. second, though, because no disrespect to Odunze. I need to dive into both of their films more. I've been watching some quarterback stuff as of late, but from what I've seen and from everything I read and everything everyone says, Marvin Harrison Jr. is just head and shoulders better than pretty much every wide receiver prospect we've gotten in recent years. So even in a bad landing spot, I would put him ahead of Odunze in this situation.
I mean, your thoughts, Matt? You are the resident Patriots fan here on the show.
Yeah, that's the great thing about this is, I don't know if I'd call it great, but there's the small silver lining for me of if Marvin Harrison goes there and is tanked for fantasy is that I get to have Marvin Harrison on my team. However, that doesn't matter much if my grandma is throwing him the football, which has been the situation since Tom Brady left. Yeah, it is a disaster. If he goes there and they don't maneuver in the first round to get a quarterback or sign someone like Kirk Cousins, basically, it's terrible, I think. Now, Marvin Harrison, you know, to your guys' point, is a prospect of a level to where we can maybe transcend that and maybe even lift up the quarterback, whoever it is, to a better degree, and he'll still be okay. But if he goes there, which might arguably be one of the worst situations in the league, and Neighbors goes to Arizona, which might honestly be one of the best in terms of realistic, you know, options for these top wide receivers, he's far and away the better option for me. I love Kyler and the chance he has to rebound, like Florio pointed out. I think that Neighbors is the 1B in this draft class. And I think that's a hot take, because everybody has been hearing about Marvin Harrison Jr. now, obviously, for years, and assume him to be future Hall of Famer best prospect. And Malik Neighbors is kind of a little bit newer name, sliding a little bit under the radar in comparison. But he's incredible. His statistical or analytical breakdown is unbelievable. If you want to look at yards per route run in college, which is one of the best things to look at when you're looking at these prospects, he is beyond elite. We're talking like above Jamar Chase, you know, in the stratosphere of elite, that you either get a superstar or something goes wrong with the prospect. I don't see that happening here. I think he will be a superstar, and I think Arizona is the place with the opportunity, the quarterback, the draft capital. It'll all be great. So he'd be one.
I mean, look, if somehow this works out that Marvin Harrison Jr. goes to Arizona, I mean, are we talking what, third round pick in redrafts? Is that yeah, realistic? If that's what it is,
I think he's a top 24 wide receiver out the gate easily.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about this every year that we can spend all this time studying tape, talking about traits and skills and abilities and what have you. Landing spot means so much in fantasy no matter how talented you are, you land in the wrong spot and it's going to automatically put a cap on where you are. But I'm with you guys. Neighbors to Arizona makes him number one. I would probably go Odunze to Chicago number two, just because if they take Caleb, I'd feel better about his quarterback situation. It's not a talent thing. It's a situation thing. And that would put MHJ at three out of that group. Tight end has become interesting to talk about in the last couple of years. I mean, all hail Sam Laporta, who is currently the king of fantasy tight ends after his rookie season. And now we've got Brock Bowers coming. And you talk about hearing about MHJ for a couple of years. We've been hearing about Brock Bowers for over a year or so. Now, DJ sort of admits that him falling all the way to 18 to the Cincinnati Bengals probably isn't likely. He admitted that he sort of mocked this one for his own personal enjoyment. And Matt, when I looked at it, I thought, man, that seems fun. Like, the Bengals could definitely use a tight end, but also they've got Jamar Chase and they may throw the franchise tag on T. Higgins. And that feels like a lot. Even with Joe Burrow there, it just feels like a lot to try to feed Brock Bowers enough targets that we're going to love what he can be next year. So yay or nay on Bowers to the Bengals?
Next year is a yay nay. What's in between? It's a rookie tight end situation. It's tough. Now, obviously, we're all, I don't want to say poisoned by, but last year was absurd when it came to the productivity of rookie tight ends. I think we should be careful about assuming that or that things have changed. So I don't know if I'm going to be considering him a top, you know, 6, 8, maybe even 10 tight end if he goes there. But I do think it is a good spot, mainly because if there's somebody who can support that many targets, it would be a healthy Joe Burrow. Now, we'll see how healthy Joe Burrow is. But also, you know, between T. Higgins and Tyler Boyd, I think it's likely that one will be gone. I do think that they'll try to get one back, but that's going to open up a lot of targets as well, whichever one it is. And this offense is built around, you know, Burrow throwing the ball, Mixon taking the short yardage stuff. They need that. They could really use a tight end. They haven't had one, certainly not of this potential caliber. I think that he would have a great opportunity there and be solid out the gate. Yeah.
I mean, was the last, what, legit with Tyler Eifert? Maybe the last.
Yeah, probably.
And that's been a while.
He was good for fantasy back in the day.
He was. No, he did have a couple of really good fantasy. See, I'm looking at it right now. 2015, 615 yards, whatever, 13 touchdowns. That's great.
You know? I'd love to see that. That was 9 years ago, though, at this point.
Yeah. I was saying, it's 2015 is a while ago, right? And like he had 13 touchdowns that 1 year. He had 13 touchdowns the rest of his career combined. So, you know, they could definitely use a tight end. I just worry that there's not enough targets potentially, at least in the first year, for Brock Bowers to really be great. Adonai Mitchell, DJ has him going to Tampa Bay. They're, now, the big point here, Florio, is that you know Mike Evans could be on his way out of Tampa. I know Baker Mayfield has said he wants to run it back. He wants to keep the band back together. I think that'd be a lot of fun. If he leaves, I mean, Adonai Mitchell, big body guy who's good downfield, wins jump balls. Sounds a lot like Mike Evans. I know we're not super geeked about Baker, but would you feel better if this was potentially the replacement for Evans?
I'd feel a little. I would feel better than if they just didn't replace him at all. But like, no disrespect to Mitchell. He's not going to come in and give you what Mike Evans gave you last year. Like,
he's not going to rip off 10 straight 1,000-yard seasons or whatever.
And be one of the best downfield options and great in the red zone. And so, yeah, it would be a hit to the Bucs, to Baker, to all of that if Mike Evans was to leave. And I've kind of been pushing Mike Evans to the Chiefs for a while now. If that doesn't happen, I think the Bucs make a lot of sense for him to just kind of go back. But, yeah, I think it would be lofty expectations to put on any rookie to be like, hey, you're our Mike Evans replacement. Even if you could be 75% of what Mike Evans was, like that would be a huge success. And for Baker, I totally understand why Baker wants to run this back and have everyone come back and everything. Cause
heck
like,
yeah.
where else is he going to go? You know? So like he's advocating for Baker by that, not the Bucks.
I mean, look, I'm not mad at it. He's coming off, you know, his best career season. I mean, he looked great. And I know you and I have sat on this show and apologized to Baker multiple times because we didn't believe. And he went out and he had a very, very good year. So absolutely, Baker's looking out for Baker when he says Mike Evans should come back. I'm not mad about that, like, in the least. But speaking of sending guys to Kansas City, you know, Florio says he's sort of pushing Mike Evans that direction. DJ Okada has Troy Franklin from the University of Oregon going to KC. Franklin, a speed guy, a vertical threat. That is one thing that the Chiefs have been missing since Tyreek Hill left. I'm not going to sit here and say that Troy Franklin's going to be the next Tyreek Hill, but can he be better than Marquez Valdez-Scantling? Can he be that guy? And if he is the hype train going to go off the rails? Because, you know, we anytime a skill position guy goes to a Patrick Mahomes offense, we get maybe a little bit too fired up. Does the hype train get going again if Troy Franklin lands in KC?
Well, okay. Can he be better than MVS? Easily, yes, because I think I might be able to put up 300 yards catching passes for Patrick Mahomes. MVS was a disaster last year, barring a couple nice plays towards the end of the season. But most of the stuff we remember him for was bad. So replacing him is easy. If you bring in Troy Franklin to replace him, what does that look like for Troy Franklin? Does he double or triple that production? I don't necessarily know. Here's what I'll say on Franklin and the hype train. Does he have the blazing speed? Yes. What does that make us automatically think of when we're talking about Kansas City? Tyreek Hill, of course. It's very hard to replace Tyreek Hill. And what you'll note is that the Chiefs haven't really tried. Andy Reid hasn't really tried. He said, oh, we don't have the greatest, possibly the greatest weapon at the wide receiver position that we've ever seen. Not necessarily greatest receiver, but just in terms of like the ability to destroy a defense or put fear in a defense. Tyreek Hill is absurd. We don't have that. Okay, let's not try to replace him because it's not possible. Let's do something else. And this last year, Patrick Mahomes, like it or not, Chiefs fans or Mahomes truthers, was the dink and dunkiest quarterback in the National Football League. Mm-hmm. You know, we went into that Super Bowl, everybody talking about Brock Purdy being a game manager, dink and dunker. It was Mahomes who was throwing everything behind the line. And that's what Reed does, is he comes up with creative answers for the roster you have. So if Troy Franklin goes there, I will like it. I will be excited because you still have Patrick Mahomes as your quarterback. It doesn't matter if you're going to replace Tyreek Hill or not. Having Mahomes is great. And he is a great prospect with tools to be absurdly good, especially with a quarterback who can throw a deep ball like that. But I would temper the hype train a bit if it turns into Tyreek Hill. That I don't really expect. I think he'll be solid, but careful.
He's the Gabe Davis replacement. That's what Troy Franklin really is.
Oh, I don't know. That excites me a whole lot either, necessarily. I mean, that's just, you know, so you're saying he's better in best ball already. He hasn't even stepped on the field, and you're just saying he's the best ball sort of guy.
Honestly, that's kind of valid.
The only thing that worries me, and this, I will admit, this is me maybe being in my own head too much, right? And like, sometimes I think we can all be guilty of not judging the player on his individual merits and maybe just on situation. And my first thought is the Chiefs recently, and by recently, I mean maybe the last decade, have not been great at drafting wide receivers. Like, yes, they found Rashee Rice, and that looks like it's going to turn out to be good. But you go back, Sky Moore, Cornell Powell was a fifth round pick in 2021. Mecole Hardman. Yes, I know he caught the Super Bowl winning touchdown, but Mecole Hardman has not blossomed into anything over his career. I'm trying to look at some of the other guys. Jehu Chesson, DeMarcus Robinson. You know, Tyreek Hill was a fifth round guy that they thought was going to be a special teamer more than anything. Like, they didn't draft him to be the guy that he has become. Chris Conley, which, by the way, side note, I thought it was interesting. Chris Conley tackling, who was it for the Chiefs? Like, there were a swap of players, like former 49ers playing for the Chiefs and former Chiefs playing for the 49ers in the Super Bowl, and they ended up tackling each other. I thought that was amusing. That's just my own thing. Long story short, though, the Chiefs have not been great at drafting wide receivers, and that makes me nervous, and I probably shouldn't do that.
They certainly have a type.
They do have a type.
If you can run fast, they are interested in you.
Yeah. Honestly, they haven't done a great job of just having good wide receivers, draft or otherwise. Besides Tyreek Hill, who's the last one before that was great? I don't even know.
Yeah. No, it's been a while. I mean, look.
Dwayne Bowe?
Yes, Dwayne Bowe. That might be the only other one.
Wow. Richie James, by the way. That's the name I was trying to think of. Richie James. Yeah. I mean, what? We're not really that far removed from a season where the Chiefs had, you know, no touchdowns from a wide receiver. I mean, it wasn't really that long ago that happened.
It just makes Travis Kelce that much more impressive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. 100%. So anyway, just wanted to kind of dive through this mock draft a little bit. I know we'll do it again as we get closer to draft season and start talking about landing spots. Ideally, we're going to start talking to some other folks too, maybe get Bucky Brooks on the show. I know he's down in New Orleans right now with Laquan, he's obviously got his finger on the pulse of this stuff as well. So that'll be fun to talk about as we get a little bit closer to April and May. But Matt, we appreciate you hanging out, man. For folks who are looking out for you, man, where can they find your stuff?
At Matt Okada on Twitter. Go to NFL.com and read this Cuts article. There's also going to be a free agency boom bust article coming out soon. Spoiler Ooh. Alert. I don't actually know if I'm even allowed to say that, but there it is.
It's already out. Too late.
With some fantasy implications as well. So that one will be fun to read.
Ooh, outstanding. We might have to get you back on then to talk about that one too as well, because that sounds actually awesome. Go check out Matt. We're gonna take a quick break, come back, and Mike and I, we're gonna try to figure out how to fix all-star games, because apparently that's a thing that we need to do. Anyway, stick around for more of the NFL Fantasy Football Podcast.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day. And smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
You ever get that feeling like the concrete jungle's closing in? You crave wide open spaces, the chance to chase your own dinner, or just breathe clean air. Well, listen up. There's a whole world out there waiting, and finding your piece of it just got easier. Head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, you name it. Search by acreage, price, location. They've got it all. No matter what kind of wild dream you're chasing, land.com can help you find the ground to make it a reality. So quit dreaming. Head over to land.com, find your open space, and get out there.
So wrapping up the show, and by the way, thanks to Matt Okada for stopping by. Be sure to check him out. Read his column on NFL.com. But wanted to finish with something just kind of a little bit different, because we're not that far removed from the Pro Bowl, just what, about 3 weeks or so. The NBA All-Star Game just happened over the past weekend, and it seems as though the big talking points when it comes to All-Star Games recently has been that, you know, they need to be fixed. No one cares. The players don't seem all that interested. I mean, for years, everybody said, well, the Pro Bowl has turned into a flag football game, so the NFL just went on and made it an actual flag football game. The NBA All-Star Game pretty much is just uncontested dunks and lightly contested three-point shots. I mean, the East scored 200 points this year in the All-Star Game. So it's obviously not the same as it was, you know, 10, 15, 20, 30 years ago. So I guess as we sit here and talk about it, do we still need All-Star Games? Do we still even want All-Star Games as a general public? And you know, how do we fix them if that's the case?
I can't speak for the whole public, but me, I don't think we need them. I think they're outdated. Like, baseball was my first love. And as a 90s kid, I mean, interleague play only really started in like the late 90s. So when I was a kid, I loved the All-Star Game because, like, even when there was interleague play in like the late 90s, early 2000s, it was 2 weeks of the season or something like that. And you would play like, the Mets would always play the Yankees. But like, if I wanted to see Mike Piazza face like Pedro Martinez, the Mets were never good enough to make the World Series. So that was my only opportunity to really see it. Now we get interleague play every single day of the baseball season. So I don't think it's as needed. And I thought long and hard about how to fix them.
Okay.
And you can't offer money to people who have all the money in the world. Like there's not going to be enough money to get them to play.
Right.
So I was like, how can we incentivize it? And time is what we have that the players need this time of year. So they play the NBA All-Star Game on Sunday night, right? Mm-hmm. Whoever loses, if the East lose, every Eastern Conference team plays that Monday, and the West gets off until Thursday as planned.
Oh.
Because if you told them, it's like The Office. You watch The Office, right? Like when they play to work on Saturday, everyone is playing hard because no one wants to work on Saturday. Mm-hmm. I think, look, it would be hard to plan with venues and arenas.
Like scheduling, would be kind of tough.
But if you told the players your vacation depends on it, you're going to get defense. That's for sure.
That's interesting. I never considered that. That would be a definite way to get guys to like focus in and pay attention a little bit. I mean, my thought was maybe not to fix the All-Star Games, but let's just de-emphasize them a little bit, right? Like All-Star Saturday Night still has some meaning to it, even though I think the dunk contest has probably run its course because we've seen it. Like, I don't know what anybody can do short of, you know, anti-gravity boots or something like that. Like, I think we've seen all of the dunks that can be done.
Like, Jaylen Brown had one, and Kenny Smith or whoever the announcer was like, in 85, that was a 50. And it's like, well, right, we've seen that dunk for 40 years now.
You know, I think somebody tweeted, like, you know, like, jumping over people, like, we've seen every variation of you jumping over people now. Like, it's just, it's not as exciting anymore. My thought was just to take the All-Star Game and just flip-flop the days, right? Like, you know, put the All-Star Game on like Saturday afternoon or something like that. Let them play, like get that out of the way. And then the skills showcase, because that seems to be what people really get excited for. You know, the three-point shootout is still exciting. That's still interesting. I mean, you had the Steph versus Sabrina. That was fun to watch. I legitimately enjoyed that.
I thought it was the best part of the night.
Yeah, so why don't we make that the centerpiece then? Why don't we put that part on Sunday and make that the showcase of the weekend? The game itself can be, you know, like whatever. They want to play, you know, have it score be, you know, 208 to 186 or whatever it was. We can do that part on Saturday. Have that Saturday afternoon. Also, let's not start it so late.
Yeah.
It starts really late. And I say that as somebody on the West Coast where it's like still, you know, 5:30 in the evening. But like, there's nothing else going on Sunday. Just play the game already. Like, we don't have to wait all day.
It's hard because, like, you can't really incentivize them to want to play for because they have all the money and they...
Right.
And rightfully so. And they don't want to get hurt.
They don't want to get hurt.
And so it's really hard to... I think back in the day, there was some pride on it when it was like, this is the only time we're going to play each other and I want to show that I'm better than you. But... we get these matchups every single night for 6 months.
Yeah, and I think I've seen a lot of people make the point, too, that now because rings culture, which has kind of infected every sport, is so important. If I'm a player in any sport, why am I going to go out and risk injury that prevents me from possibly winning a championship? Because that's all I'm going to be judged on when my career is over. You know, no matter what I do, no matter how many other awards I win... somebody's got to say, well, you didn't get a ring. So why would I bother busting my butt to win an all-star game or get an all-star game MVP when, you know, people aren't really going to credit that for anything. So I get that.
The all-star game MVP is almost like the smallest award you could win. Like you said, like Dame won the MVP and the three-point contest. I think more people care about the three-point contest win than anything. Like, the dunk contest, I think people care more about than who gets the All-Star Game MVP.
Although it's funny that, you know, you could see Dame was really going out of his way to win that thing early. Like, he was really, like, from the beginning. Because, like, the first few minutes, you thought maybe Tyrese Halliburton, he came out of the gate firing. I think he scored 15 points in the first couple minutes. And then after a while, Dame took over. You're like, all right, he's obviously on a mission to win this MVP.
I will say... I love that he stole it from the hometown kid. No offense to Halliburton and the Pacers, just the heel doing that. Oh, I love it.
Oh yeah, especially for the team playing with the team in, you know, the same division too. Like that's hilarious to me. Also, I think it's funny that the NBA's back-to-back dunk champion doesn't actually play in the NBA.
It's one of my favorite things that there's a guy not good enough to be in the NBA, but no one can out-dunk him.
But he's the great. He apparently is the champion dunker of the NBA. Like, I know we should do that in other sports too, right? Have skills competitions. Like, you know, I don't know, have, you know, see if some guy from AAA can come up win the home run derby or something like that, right? Like, let's do it.
It should be a yearly event. Like, look, I know Steph won. Sabrina put up 26, which was the high score in both rounds, the men's 3-point.
She would have been the finals.
And Steph made it look like yearly. Let's just pick anyone in the world and see if they can outshoot Steph.
That's, you know what? Loser leaves the court. Like, Steph just stays on until somebody beats him, right? He just stays on. He keeps shooting until somebody beats him, and we'll see how long he can go. He's got
jelly legs, and he can't jump anymore.
He's like, so you can't lift his arms anymore because he's been shooting all day. I think here's the thing. I think the NFL has sort of gone at least along the right path with the skills competition, and I think that's kind of become one of the showcases of the Pro Bowl weekend. You know, I think people, you know, are sort of interested in the flag football game and what have you, but I think the skills competition is, I think that's sort of the thing with these All-Star weekends now, because as you mentioned, it's not necessarily special to see the players go up against each other because we tend to see it a whole lot. You know, I think for us who play fantasy, we've been putting All-Star teams together for a long time now. So,
And we're hardcore sports fans. Like, Nicolette watches the Home Run Derby with me. She watched Saturday Night with me. She doesn't care, but she's like, this is entertaining. And she would not think that of an All-Star game.
Yeah. You know, I think the All-Star games have become like, you know, I don't know, cut to the sidelines, see what celebrities are hanging out there. At least the NBA All-Star game for sure. I don't know. It is definitely, as you mentioned, I think a thing from a bygone era when you couldn't see guys. I mean, I pulled up as you were talking the 1991 Major League Baseball All-Star Game, you know, and how amazing it was, you know, potentially to see Dennis Eckersley face Tony Gwynn, because you just weren't going to get that in a regular season. You know, just wasn't going to happen. Now it can happen all the time. It's not as fun.
It kind of reminds me of the World Baseball Classic a couple years ago when it was Ohtani versus Trout. And
that was amazing.
Yeah, everyone was watching that, even though most people would say that that game doesn't really matter.
But it was amazing, right? Because we don't see now. We actually may see it now that they're on different teams. We may actually get to see that at some point in the very near future. We'll see. But there it is. All-Star games. Yeah, they're just there. I think that's sort of the end result of this whole conversation. But I do like your idea of maybe giving some guys extra rest if their team wins the All-Star game. We'll see if guys play a little bit harder in that case. We'll see. Anyway, that'll do it for this edition of the NFL Fantasy Football Podcast. Thanks to Matt Okada for hanging out with us as well. Stay happy, safe, and healthy. Do good and live well. Enjoy the week, everybody. And we'll talk to you again real soon.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
What's up, y'all? Janice Torres here.
And I'm Austin Hankwitz.
We're the hosts of Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories, a podcast presented by iHeartRadio's Ruby Studios and Intuit QuickBooks. Join us as we speak with small business owners about the tools they use to turn their ideas into success.
From finding that initial spark of entrepreneurship to organizing payments and invoices, we've got you covered. So follow and listen to Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.